When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast.
Hey there, welcome to the very latest Andy J podcast, the third one for this week, if you're listening in real time. On Tuesday, we brought you Keith Lemon. On Wednesday, Ashley Banjo. And today, Friday, we are giving you a double header of joyful human actors. What a random way of saying it. We've got Angus Imray, star of The Crown, Fleabag, The Kid Who Would Be King, and just such a lovely, lovely fella. He's Celia Imray's son, actually, and you'll hear from this. He's a thoughtful, charming, very interesting chap. I really enjoyed his company. And we also have Tamsin Outhwaite, partly because we forgot to put it out when I spoke to her a few weeks ago. And, well, she's just a lovely lady and she gives a great chat. So, yeah, we thought they'd be a really fun team to have in this bonus podcast for you. I can also tell you that on the show next week, I'm going to be able to bring you some very special conversation. Firstly, we have another conversation booked in with Mr. Jeremy Clarkson, following on from the hour we spent with him at the very end of last year in December. We're having another half hour or so together to chat about farming and life and all sorts of things. Really looking forward to that. So that'll be with you next week. And not one, but two Oscar winners. Oh yes, Florian Zeller and Olivia Colman. Florian Zeller, the playwright and director who has just written the screenplay for and directed The Father, starring Anthony Hopkins, who won an Oscar for it, incidentally, and Olivia Colman, who was Oscar nominated. It is a sensational movie, and I had a short amount of time with the two of them, Olivia Colman and Florian Zeller, two Oscar winners, and my goodness, they were so, so lovely. So on the way for you next week here on the Andy J Podcast, not one, but two Oscar winners, and Jeremy Clarkson again. Yeah, love it. Anyway, here we go. Enjoy this. Have a wonderful, wonderful day. Go make someone smile. And thank you for your company. Please do subscribe. Tell your friends. Let's get everyone listening to these shows because some of the chats we're having. Oh, love it. Here is the brilliant Angus Imray, followed by Tamsin Outhwaite.
The Andy J Podcast.
Now, I'm delighted to be able to welcome my next guest. He's a man you will know from so many unbelievable productions like Fleabag, The Crown, the movie The Kid Who Would Be King. And if you love your radio dramas, well, he's only in The Archers. It's the one and only Angus Imray. How are you doing, Angus?
Hello. I'm doing really well, Andy. How are you doing? Nice to be here.
It's really, really good to be chatting to you. I had to drop The Archers. I'll be honest with you, Angus. I've not listened to The Archers for a very long time, but it is staggeringly well known, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very, very well known. It's a proper institution. Very, very popular with people's mums and aunties, it tends to be. And, you know, but the thing is, I've suddenly become a fan now. I think it just, once you start listening and then you just can't stop, it just is that constant thing of week by week and you get invested in the characters and people absolutely adore it.
Yeah, they do. It's not a cult following by any stretch of the imagination. This is a proper major fandom for The Archers, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, I think it goes to the heart of what an intimate way of telling stories audio is. You know, I love listening to the radio myself on programs like yours, and it goes to the heart of getting that really intimate connection with a listener where it feels as if you're the only person listening. It's almost as if it's for you. Yeah. And I think The Archers manages to do that amazingly well. It's great to be a part of.
Well, you've got massive brownie points with me for saying that, Angus. And I can reveal to you that the Andy J Show is made exclusively for you. So that's okay. I mean, that's okay. All right.
fantastic. For the listener who's listening to this, it's just for them.
Yeah. Well, actually, I meant just specifically for you, Angus. But no, we're all good. I mean, there obviously a lovely army of talk radio fans that join us as well, which is absolutely brilliant. And also, am I right in saying, I might have got this wrong, Angus, so apologies if I have, but were you also in industry, which I've watched recently on a catch-up on BBC?
Yeah, I was. I played a character who wasn't really in the midst of the banking world. He was called Dig Dog, and he ran his own student journalism business. So he was really on the periphery, but still involved in the drug taking and the hedonism that surrounded it. But yeah, I really loved playing that character. It was a great, drawing on inspiration from people you might have met or known. It was good fun. I've got to pray that he comes back for the next series.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, you've had some awesome character names, haven't you? You say that was Dig Dog. Then there was obviously Creepy Jake, which is just glorious in Fleabag. what a character. I mean, you sort of know when they send you the script through. Was he called Creepy Jake in the script? Please say yes.
I actually think he was just called Jake.
Oh.
But the thing is that, you know, the way that Fleabag works is, I think Priest as well was also just called Priest in the script. But of course, he's become known as Hot Priest.
Yep.
So they it's amazing how the reception has almost changed the character names into these, you know, adjectives. It's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. Well,
I'll happily take Creepy Jake anytime.
Yeah, not technically the character name, but nonetheless what he was known as. And then, of course, I mean, we've got to touch on The Crown, because crikey, what a phenomenal series that has turned out to be. You've obviously played Prince Edward season 4, and it's a colossus, isn't it?
That's exactly what it is. It's an amazing, amazing project to be a part of, and really felt at times as if I was stepping back in time. I'll never forget the moment I saw Emma Corrin playing Diana from behind, and she was wearing an iconic Diana outfit, and her hair was just perfect. And it really felt like I was stepping into some alternate world or stepping back 40 years or something. Extraordinary. It was an amazing thing to be a part of, and I feel really, really lucky to have had that opportunity. And incredibly well written, you know, he really and truly, Prince Edward only has one chance in that series to show you who he is, you know. But there were so many nuances in that one lunch scene that I had with the Queen as Prince Edward that can really take you on a journey of this person who feels as if they deserve something for having been their services to the country and the royal family, but also is quite hurt and is being bullied at school. It's a real nuanced perspective.
Yes, and I think it's changed some minds, you know, both obviously here in the UK and probably abroad about how we perceive the royals, I would have thought. I mean, you know, because you feel a real sort of invasive connection, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't choose this life, and so it's a strange mixture between the sense of duty to the country and also perhaps not wanting to be there entirely. And I think that the success of the show is, of course, in bringing to light both the private and the public. Yeah. And it's an exploration. We don't know really what's gone on in private, but it's a real intimate exploration of what we imagine might be going on in private. And that can often be incredibly different from the exterior that we as the public see of the royal family's life. So definitely, I'm sure it's increased sympathy in many respect, and it might have changed people's opinions in another as well, which I also think is okay.
I would love to know what a bona fide member of the royal family actually thinks of it, because you just know they've watched it, don't you? I mean, they've clearly been gripped to it.
Your curiosity would be pricked far too much not to, wouldn't it? It would just be extraordinary to see such a and done so beautifully and done with, you know, or practically replica sets and costume and everything. It would be far too intriguing to miss out, I think.
I'd love to get a line just from her Madge, you know. Oh yeah, it's all right. I really like season 3, you know, or something. Just a random.
That would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Wasn't she tall or whatever, you know, just, yeah, be brilliant. Yeah. Be brilliant. Angus, I feel like I'm sort of brushing through your career, but you've done so much. But you're only 26. You know, also Pennyworth, Emma, Kingdom. You've been a busy boy. How, I mean, you started at age 5. Obviously, I must assume having parents who were both successful actors was probably a help in this thing.
Oh, I mean, that's definitely true. I think it's funny, for so long I've wanted to try and, you know, forge my own path and be very independent and reject any idea that it was influenced by the fact that my mum and dad are actors. But I, like anything, I think that the fact that they did have a career in it, it just meant that I knew that it was possible, I suppose. So it doesn't mean that my passion for it isn't as real, but it just means that I knew that it was a possibility, I guess, as a career. And yeah, I did grow up around film sets and TV sets since I was very young. But I suppose I also like to think of just my career proper starting since I left drama school, if you know what I mean. So that's 2017. Then when you're an adult actor, then it feels like you're in a different realm, I think, as a career, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's still sort of playing until it needs a paycheck.
I think that's probably right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I must say, we welcomed your mum on the show a few months ago, and she was just the most spectacular company. I thought she was wonderful. Loved chatting with your mum.
She was, she's an amazing mum and person.
Yeah. Yeah, no, sure. she was really brilliant. Angus, I've got to talk to you about Homeward Bound. This is the new drama that you've been doing with Creation Theatre. Now, you've already touched on your love of all things audio, and of course with the Archers and so on, you can't fail there. So tell me about Homeward Bound, because I want to hear about the theatre company as well, because I've done a little research on them and they seem very impressive. And this is, I'm pleased to say, an audio drama that's going to be accessible for all.
Absolutely, it is. Creation are amazing. Creation have been one of the top innovators in theatre, if you like, during the pandemic. They've really, really created some amazing shows which people have been able to access on Zoom, from their award-winning Alice in Wonderland, and that they've been watched over in over 15 countries across continents during that whole time. They've really been at the forefront of that theatrical innovation when we haven't been able to gather in a space. Yeah. But meanwhile, I've been, you know, as I already touched on, really, really loving listening to things this whole time. I think that it's such a special way of connecting to information or debate and also storytelling. And so I really wanted to make something for audio. And I reached out to Creation because I knew that they might be interested in this, with this play that I've written, which is about a family scattering their father's ashes, essentially. And it came from a personal experience and sort of discovering that in the aftermath of a bereavement or in the aftermath of a death, there really aren't any set rules, you know. And I found that we were suddenly rushing towards functional things, you know, like ringing up and registering the death, or speaking to someone about maybe writing something about him, or thinking about what you would say in a tribute. And it all felt very functional. It didn't really have a connection to any ritual or something that might be spiritual. I don't know. And so the play is an exploration of that, and them trying to remember certain fragments of what the person, William, who's died, would have wanted, you know, where he would have wanted his ashes scattered, where they used to go when they were young, and all of these things and all these memories are forgotten, really. Anyway, I'd written this play and I reached out to Creation Theatre and I had an amazing call with Lucy Askew, the artistic director, in which she loved the script and said, let's make it, and let's not just make an audio piece that people can just click on and listen to. Let's make something that is an immersive experience. So let's include illustrations with it. So although they've been really, really innovative in their approach with Zoom, Creation want to now moves away from the screen. We're all a bit fed up of screens. And so if we can just take a moment to sit down, look at the illustrations that have been made for this play by the incredible Lucy Jollo, and maybe even colour them in, whilst you really take the time for half an hour just to sit and listen and experience that as it is, not doing anything else but listening and looking at the images, then you can create that holy and special experience of being in the theatre and taking the time to actually be with your own thoughts and connect what might be happening in the play with your own life.
Yes, I mean, it'll be a real immersion, won't it? Which I think is...
Yeah.
I love how the envelopes are being pushed here. It's a completely different way of doing it. And that's exactly how, you know, theatre and the media landscape can evolve and develop and continue to deliver excellence and something special. You've told us how you wrote this play, and it is centred around the scattering of this father husband's ashes. And you've obviously said that you've written it yourself from personal experience. You know, your father Benjamin, he died, and I'm assuming that was informing the play.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly the case that was the initial impetus to write it. The characters, of course, are very different from people in my family, but there's a huge influence there. And it as I've said, it came from that lack of kind of, there's no ceremony. I found there was nothing I knew what to do, you know, in the aftermath. And you find yourself coming out with these cliches like, you know, oh, I need to be on my own, or I don't know, you sort of do what you feel might be expected of you when somebody dies. Whereas actually, now I've reflect on it, I feel like I wanted to be surrounded by people, and I wanted to have some ritual or ceremony to cling to in order to be able to remember them. And I feel like the functional things became at the forefront. You know, where are we going to have the funeral? What are we going to do? And that's how the play starts, is with these phone calls in the immediate aftermath, where they're sort of, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And everyone on the phone says it's too early to do all this. You know, don't worry, just take some time. But the important thing is the play is a really, really funny exploration of that. And as anyone who's listening who's lost someone will know, mingled in with the sorrow is like moments of just total comedy, where you're all floundering and trying to get things right, particularly with something like scattering the ashes. It's hardly ever what you imagine it's going to be. And it's very difficult to create a holy atmosphere, particularly if there's a young kid around, which is what happens in the play. There's a six-year-old called Sean, and it's difficult for him to grasp what's going on. I'd describe it as a comedy, but also one that's incredibly heartfelt and warm.
It sounds very special, Angus. I must say, just sort of listening to the way you speak about it, and of course, you know, like you say, there's no guidebook to grief. Nobody sort of tells you, well, listen, at some point in your life, somebody of great importance is going to die, and the first thing you're going to have to do is identify a body, and then you're going to have to choose a coffin and decide who comes to and whereabouts you'll be doing it. And nobody tells you this stuff, you've just taken in this life-changing, heart-wrenching, devastating news that you'll never actually recover from. You just have to learn to live with. But meanwhile, in that immediate, hang on, I still haven't processed what you've just said. There's a bunch of practical things that need doing. You use the word functional. And it's just an absolute head F, isn't it? It's just like, what? How do I have to do what? I mean, hang on, but this has just happened to me. And are you kidding? Yeah, it's
totally
crazy.
Totally. And I think that sometimes we move towards, you know, that's a way of coping, is going, oh, well, if I do this, then it'll be okay again. You know, if I perform these functional tasks well, then suddenly it'll be all right. And I think that you need somewhere to put your energies, don't you?
Yeah.
And there's a difference, you know, in some cultures you might do that in a very ritualized or ceremonial way, or if you're religious, then that might be the case. But I think that what I've written is, in you know, a secular world and in the world of the play, in which, you know, William, the man who's died, there's a line that's quoted of his where he says, "I'm not remotely interested in anything." Sorry, "I'm not interested in anything remotely connected to religion," he says. Right. So the play is an expression of how do you then create something which is beyond the functional for someone who doesn't want a ceremony, you know, and because really it's for the people who are left, you know, how they can deal with things. I think that sometimes all our energies are poured into those practical things that we can do. And actually, I suppose the play is hoping to explore what's beyond that, what might be a bit more spiritual and a bit more connected to something holy.
Gosh, I mean, that sounds incredible. And might I just say, Angus, you know, for you to be this sort of switched on and clued up at the tender age of 26, I'm a very old man. So, you know, you sound like you've got the whole world ahead of you, and your kind of depth of understanding that's already present in your life is one that will set you on the path for remarkable things. So, I mean, good for you, Angus.
Thanks, Andy.
I'm really looking forward to hearing it, actually. It sounds like an incredible piece of work. Obviously, we need to do the business bits. How do we get involved? How can we hear it, see the illustrations, and so on?
Great. Well, you can go on Creation Theatre website, and it'll be up there, and you'll be able to buy a ticket for a fiver. Can you believe that? Just a fiver. Great. On from the 4th of June. So we're recording it as we speak. You know, this week and the next, and then the illustrations are being printed, and we'll get all the envelopes fitted up and sent to you. So it'll be a real bespoke experience for everyone receiving it through their front door from the 4th of June.
Great, and that's creationtheatre.co.uk.
That's right.
Brilliant, Angus. Wow. Listen, good luck with this. I will be spending my fiver and watching it and colouring in and enjoying the illustrations and so on as soon as possible. So it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
The Andy J Podcast.
My final guest this week, she was the darling of EastEnders, Hotel Babylon, Red Cap, and more recently has been directing her good buddy Denise Van Outen in the theatre. As well as her passions for the arts and her famous friendship circle, she's also extremely passionate about recycling. And she joins me now to talk about her work with Material Focus on how we're binning our partner's tat, sometimes without them even knowing about it. I am delighted to welcome Tamsin Outhwaite. How are you doing, Tamsin?
Hello, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm slightly nervous about this one because I think I'm going to learn some things about my missus and where certain things have gone.
Ah, because she's a secret thrower.
Well, sometimes secret, sometimes very blatant, but you know, this is one of those things. I like this. I've read this study, but I'd love you to tell us about it because it's, firstly, it's a lot of fun, but secondly, it's a little unnerving when I see some of the statistics.
It is unnerving, but if your partner is chucking away some of your electricals you don't need, they're doing a good thing because you don't need them. Basically, in the UK alone, we hold on to 527 million small old electricals that we don't use. That's 155,000 tons of waste are thrown away. So when I found out about recycling your electricals, it was because I had a load of, you know, stuff that I didn't know. I always thought, oh, I'll get that old laptop reconditioned. And once it's been through the whole family, it then needs to go somewhere where, you know, it's doing a lot better than sitting collecting dust. So you can donate them on their campaign, Little Spring Clean. As far as your partner's stuff goes, I'd like to chuck away my partner's PlayStation. That's the thing that gets me. But then I'd have my daughters and my partner, you know, they'd notice in about 4 seconds.
Yes. Well, also, that's in use. I mean, surely that would be... I kind of understand if something's been gathering dust and hasn't been touched for a long time. I kind of get that. But you can't chuck things out that are in use, surely.
No, you can't. It's just because I'm not a gamer. So, you know, that's just me being like a bit old for all these games. But as far as the, you know, why do we keep kettles that we don't use? Because in case the kettle you know, break. So you've got a backup kettle. Why? You don't need a backup kettle.
Well, actually, that's a very salient point, because when I talk about my missus throwing out some of my things, a kettle happens to be the point of contention for us.
It's still
raw, to be honest with you. I'll explain it to you. You tell me if I'm being irrational here. This was a kettle that my now deceased grandmother had given me. And I couldn't bring myself to throw it away. It had a quirky whistle. It made me think of her all the time. Yes, it wasn't being used, and it, you know, it was gathering dust. But it did get thrown out without my knowledge, and I was
See, that's different, because that is sentimental. That's emotional. Yeah. You're attached to that emotionally, but you're not attached to like a spare printer, are you?
Oh no. No. And if it was a kettle I just bought myself, off it goes. Bin it off. Not a problem.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm with you there.
I was very upset. I mean, I wasn't angry. I was just sad.
Yeah. But you've got the memories. You've got, you know, you've got all the memories of her. The kettle is not going to... I think you need to... How many years ago is this?
Oh, this is some time. I mean, we've had three kids since then. I mean, to be fair...
Oh, okay. We've got to let this one go.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think I actually think about the kettle more since she hurled it out than when it was just sitting in the cupboard. So maybe it was a good thing.
I think I would advise you to go around and just look at the electricals you don't use, rather than like being a secret thrower. I mean, I'm a hoarder, a real bad hoarder. So what I'm doing is, I know I've got like hair appliances. Are they? Yes, they're small appliances, and they're like a straightener and a tong thing and rollers, and you know, I don't think I do all that with my hair very much anymore. So. I mean, I've got an awful lot to chuck out now. I mean, if you go to the website, recycleyourelectricals.org.uk, you can find out where your nearest point is, where you can drop off your stuff, and then you just feel cleaner. Your conscience feels clean, and yeah, I feel a lot happier like when I've done a clear out, especially with the electricals.
Yeah, and I think it's important to think about that website as well, because actually that way they're not just going to landfill, are they? They're actually getting a proper second life. They will be used in the right ways.
Absolutely. So they either get donated to people that need them more than us. They're either mended, they're reconditioned, or that where they go is they get recycled. So it's not chucking them in the bin. Yeah. They're being recycled.
It's the same, actually, isn't it, with mobile phones? You know, some people like to keep old mobile handsets because there's some sort of memory to them, rather than just wiping them and getting a few quid back for them or whatever. And I just kind of think, what? What's the thing behind that?
I mean, how do you wipe a mobile phone? Do you have to go to someone to do it?
No.
You can do that yourself, can you?
Yeah, it's very, right, especially so if you've got an iPhone. Thing.
An awful lot of people have older iPhones where the screen's smashed or whatever. So you can wipe it, go online, look at Recycle Your Electricals, give them away, give them to someone who needs them more.
Yeah.
You can donate them somewhere else. So much less waste, and you're doing so much, you know, you're doing better things with them. It just feels good, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Now, a slight grey area that I've seen in this study, and I'd love to get your steer on this, because I don't know how I feel yet, is the discarding of wedding items.
Oh. Well...
You've made the sound that I made in my head when I read it.
Oh. To be honest, what is that, like a revenge thing, like through divorce or something, where people... I don't understand why. I mean, I suppose I often think, you know, I should maybe donate my wedding dress to someone. But my daughter did say to me that might be the only time she ever wears a dress, and she'd like to have my old wedding dress. So now it's in the loft and it's being kept for her.
Yeah.
But apart from the dress, I don't really have much else from my wedding. What do you mean, like photos?
Well, no, what they're saying, so the study says 1 in 5 people, so 21%, have admitted to throwing out their loved one's wedding dress or wedding suit. Now, unfortunately, I'm not equipped with the knowledge of whether this is from a divorce or whether it's still in the marriage. If it's a divorce, I kind of get it straight away, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. But if you're still married, surely that's a risk.
Yeah, but is it a sentimental attachment that you don't need? The day's happened. You're still there together. Maybe the wedding suit is not necessary, and maybe somebody else could get married in it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not throwing it out. That's just donating it or recycling.
You're sort of saying we need to take a bit of a more, is zen the right word here? A bit of a more
I agree. I think it is zen. It's the clutter, isn't it? It's a tidy house, tidy mind, or whatever they say.
Yes.
That saying of like, if you can unclutter your house, it's cleansing and it makes your mind and soul feel less cluttered as well. And I suppose that's what it is. But I'm looking around this room now thinking, gosh, I really need to chuck some stuff out.
This is like the electrical equivalent of, do you remember that show on Netflix, which was where the people were like, you ask the question, does this bring me joy? We're like going into their old wardrobes and chucking out T-shirts from high school and stuff.
That was when they did, the cleansing of the clothes, which I have just done one of those recently. But there is something about the electricals because it feels like it's new, like this campaign is new. When I found out about it, I was like, what do you do with the electricals? And when I went online and found Recycle Your Electricals, I was like, oh, there is actually a website that you can donate them to.
Yeah.
The excitement was like, I don't just chuck these in the recycling, or I don't just take them to the charity shop and then they have to test everything and make sure everything works. You know, you're giving them to somebody that you know is going to house them in a much more suitable, beneficial way.
It also gets you out of the tip run, which I think is, I mean, at the moment, tips are quite busy. You know, there's a lot of people going to the tips.
Oh, yes. You have to book the tip at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a queue to get in, but there is nothing better than your man going to the tip.
Is that right?
I love it when there's a tip. A slot books because I'm like, right, brilliant, I can do a clear out before Monday at 11 o'clock. There is something about, the thing is about the tip is you do feel like it's wasteful, I suppose. I mean, you are recycling stuff, but it feels a bit wasteful in the sense that somebody would use this more.
Yeah.
Than it just being chucked. Yes. And that's what I love.
Especially if you're just hoying it in the skip, isn't it? You know, you just...
It's brutal, isn't it?
There's a certain something about it. If it's completely wrecked, fair enough. But if there's any chance someone could get a second life use out of it, use the site. Make the most of it.
Yes. Recycleyourelectricals.org.uk.
I like it. It's called Clutter Wars. And make some space.
Absolutely.
Is this because there seems to be, and look, correct me if I'm wrong, and apologies for making assumptions, but you seem to be down this really interesting path of just sort of having it all sorted. You got your yoga, your kind of life seems to be in balance. Am I completely misreading from the outside looking in? Or are things pretty good?
No, I'm all one for gratitude and I'm very grateful at the moment. My life is, you know, rosy, I'm happy, and I have a positive outlook when things aren't great. But I do feel like some days are yoga and they're zen-like and, you know, some days are chaos and clutter. So it's about getting the balance, isn't it, through your life? And I'm still learning that. I don't think you ever stop learning about that balance. I know what I need when I'm stressed, and I know I need to meditate and do some yoga, and that kind of gets me out of a stress hole. But it's not always that plain sailing.
Mm. Yes, true. And of course, there's, I mean, from me, again, I can only talk to looking at you from the outside. I don't know you, we've never met before, but I've obviously seen the things you've been doing and the way you've used lockdown, for example. And isn't it joyful that we're coming out the other side and the world is turning again? But it strikes me that actually you've had a really quite productive lockdown. You know, you...
Yes. Well, at first it was for me, I found it horrific. I was like, I couldn't get motivated to do anything. And then we did a series of dumb breeding, which was really quite inspiring because my friend Julie Graham wrote all of that very, very quickly and we filmed it quickly. And then projects started to happen that were being streamed. And I think I said yes a lot to lots of things because we'd stopped our theatre production of The Seagull just before we opened. And I think it does. The whole of lockdown, I know it's, the word unprecedented has been used continually, and it was unprecedented, but I do feel like an awful lot of positive stuff has come out of it. And I'm not desperate to rush back into the big wide world. I'm dipping my toe in, and I don't know. I'm happy. I know I'm happy, and I'm very lucky and grateful.
Yeah, no, that's what a positive way to be. I mean, if I'd said to you, say, 3 years ago, so before anyone knew what COVID-19 was and all this sort of stuff, guess what? You know, you and Denise Welsh, you'd be doing something together, but you know, you'll be setting up the cameras yourself and you'll be doing it at home. You would have thought I was kidding, wouldn't you?
course, absolutely. But the thing is there isn't there's no destination to your career. It's a journey. So sometimes you're doing the craziest things, and sometimes you're, you know, doing Chekhov. So it's a really strange industry, but I am loving the surprises.
Yeah.
And the pandemic brought some surprises.
Well, one of the great things about the arts is the resilience, isn't it? I mean, everybody that wants to be an actor or a performer or whatever, nobody sort of thinks they just walk into it and get famous and loads of money. Everyone kind of knows there's going to be a schlep. There's going to be potentially, you know, waiting tables or working in theatres and sweeping aisles and this, that and the other. Everyone's kind of aware of that. So when the pandemic hit, yes, of course, theatres were closed and cinemas were shut and it was horrible. But you did find that there were some very innovative ways to get content done.
Absolutely. I mean, you had to be very quick thinking because suddenly, you know, it was all about streaming stuff. And some people aren't made for that. You know, some of my actor friends were then doing, you know, monologues and poems, and singers were singing. And at first, I the whole talking to a camera thing, I was like, oh, I don't think I can get involved in that. And then actually you realise it's just part of your business. It's part of your industry. You just got to kind of embrace it, really. And, yeah, what a resilient industry, really. Gosh, it's some of my friends, what they've done in their lockdown time, can't quite believe it. I mean, I'm sure it's been a haven for writers that just needed to chill, sit down and do, you know, and get their deadlines done. But nothing came out of it that shocked me too much. You know, it was like, oh, brilliant. Oh, gosh, that's weird. Right, on with the next.
Yes, and you're so right. There were a lot of books that happened during lockdown. And
books and TV series, lots of writing happened, didn't it?
Yeah, which is wonderful because usually that then follows because they then become potential TV movies and so on and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. And also lots of podcasts.
There were a lot of podcasts, yeah. As a bloke with a couple of pods myself, I wasn't wild about all the competition, I'll be honest with you. You know, that was a little bit, oh, great, so another big, very famous person's doing another pod. That's, yeah, okay, that'll be another load of listeners we don't get. There we are. But now the world's turning again, they'll stop, so that's fine.
It's true, because they'll be busy doing other things.
Exactly, I feel better about that. But of course, you know, you also took a really interesting sideline. I think this was lined up pre-pandemic, but please correct me if I'm wrong. You started directing.
I did. It wasn't like, well, I tell you what was lined up, a bigger version, a different version of what we did, which Denise had put together. And then when her one-woman play with music was on, it did really well. Then the pandemic hit, and so she said, I want to do it for a camera, I want to stream it, and I really think you should direct it. And of course at first I was like, but why me, why don't you get somebody that's done loads of directing? And I have directed before, but not very much, quite new to me. And I really loved it because she's got all the skills, you know. You don't need to do very much with Denise's. You know, she had a finished product that was selling very well, and it was a great little play. And what I did really was adapt it for the screen. So where she is a theatre performer, I kind of had to bring it down, and it was just lovely watching her become really raw. And yeah, really enjoyed that. So hopefully some more of that would be good.
No, it sounds good. But can you just, because I'm very ignorant to these things, Sam, so please apologise. I do apologise for this. But obviously, you know, you mentioned you were working with Denise Van Outen and you called it a play with music. How is that different to a musical? What does that mean?
Because it only had a couple of tracks that she sung.
Okay.
That were in quite poignant moments. It wasn't like a sung through musical. It was mainly a monologue with a couple of songs.
Right.
So that's what it wasn't a musical. It's no kind of dancing. There was, she called it a play film.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I suppose a musical in layman's terms is basically where you've got a bit of dialogue to get to the next song.
Kind of. It depends what musical it is, but this was very definitely a reflective piece. So she was reflecting on her past, and she only breaks into song like twice, and they're both really beautiful moments. I mean, you should watch it. It's very funny.
Yeah, I should. It sounds fun. What's it called?
Oh, now you've got me. Some girl I used to know.
I did have it written down just in case. You've been lovely. Thank you for your company. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was lovely to chat.
If you're enjoying the Andy J podcast, we'd love a review. In fact, if you're enjoying the show, why not tell your friends? Podcasts live and die on, well, often word of mouth, so please tell your friends. Like, subscribe, review, and share. Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.